Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 80, recorded Monday, November 23rd, 2009. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: holiday flying tips and frequent flyers, the documentary. This week, coming to you today from the courtyard in downtown Philadelphia, just kitty corner from that amazing piece of architecture that is Philadelphia City Hall. Whether you think it's impressive or impressively kitsch, there are few city halls that are so in the center of things as Philadelphia. So I'm in the middle of a 24-hour up and back. I try not to fly at all, really, on Thanksgiving week. And I'm successful, I'd guess, about 50% of the time. And there are times like this year when I've got to, sneak in one quick trip before leaving the airports to the families for the Thanksgiving travel crush. The Thanksgiving travel season just seems to be getting longer, more smeared out. I was walking to my car in O'Hare last Friday afternoon after three incessantly rainy days in Seattle, and I could see the holiday traffic already starting to build. Lots of families, small kids pulling junior-sized rolling bags. If you're going to have your kid play business traveler, why not go all the way? Get him a black or charcoal gray sort of half-sized Tumi and let him feel the power the way that the primary colors of the Dora Explorer bag, are just never going to let him experience. Me, I think I just want to feel the power of that tryptophan high from Thanksgiving Day turkey, maybe extending it with leftovers through the weekend, and just being a couch slug until next Monday when I have to fight with the tail end of the smeared out holiday traffic travel and head back west again. Following up, just to continue on my rental car rant from the last episode, I booked a car a couple of weeks ago in LAX, a $19 rate, but with an additional $15 in taxes and surcharges. 44% of the total cost was taxes and surcharges. I can't figure this stuff out anymore. Hey, Arnold Heines, a longtime Travel Commons listener, sent me a note earlier this month with the subject line, Expense Mayhem. Is there any other kind of mayhem? Well, anyhow, Arnold writes, work has forced me into being a frequent traveler, and although I've got most basics down and starting to enjoy the efficiency I've made my own, however, there is one thing that I still need to master. It may sound simple, and you may think, well, what's the deal? But I have a challenge doing and keeping track of my expenses. Now, I know most people carry one of those transparent filing sleeves, as do I. However, I continually get caught off guard, especially when going from, trip to trip, where my company wants to see a split, sort of a trip inside of a trip. I've tried many things, apps for the iPhone, apps for the BlackBerry, different filing folders, etc., but I haven't gotten to a system which is really satisfactory to me. My challenge is that I have receipts coming in from events in the evening when I don't have my laptop bag at hand, the airport, hotels, different settings, etc. Finally, I hit my desk for the 2 days of doing expenses. I try to decipher the mayhem of receipts and hotel bills, car rental printouts, etc. I'm usually pretty successful. However, I feel that I'm not as efficient as I could be. I'm wondering if you could enlighten me with some tips and tricks from a seasoned traveler. Arnold, thanks for that question. I'll tell you, keeping track of your travel expenses and then getting them accurately into whatever system your company uses for reimbursement is a question close to the hearts and the wallets of every frequent traveler. I mean, I average, anywhere between 5 and 10 grand a month in travel expenses. So it's real money to me. And, there's more than once when I, missed filing a couple of $100 expense receipt, which then sort of completely reinforces that uncertainty. Am I getting paid back for everything I buy? Now, I got to tell you, I'm probably at the low end of the scale. I use the same transparent sleeves that Arnold mentions. Actually, I picked them up on one of my trips over to Europe, as well as a specific sort of pocket or sleeve, kind of section in my wallet that's reserved for receipts that I collect when I don't have my briefcase with me, for taxi receipts, parking receipts, restaurant receipts. And I also keep a business card in there, just because it's a nice fit, business card fits well there, where I jot down cash expenditures, and these are the ones that I forget the most. Now, I know a couple of folks who've tried Evernote on their iPhone, taking a picture of the receipt with the iPhone camera and then tagging it with the right project or amount. And I think Evernote tries to do some optical character recognition, and it's all sitting up in the cloud, so you can access it from anywhere. I don't know. I keep thinking about trying it, but it never gets sort of above the B level on my to-do list, which means it just never gets done. To me, though, the method of capture isn't near as important as is the discipline of doing data entry every day or every other day at the max. I mean, you can recreate a day, even yesterday in your mind, but wait till the weekend, and I don't know, unless you're an elephant, you're hosed. I get into trouble when I wait till the end of the week to try and bang in my expenses. Every other day over an end of the day beer is absolutely a best practice for me, in many ways. Hey, if any other listeners have suggestions for Arnold, please send them in or post them as comments to the website. Leo Vigoda sent me a link to a story from the beginning of November about a Phoenix couple that have been stealing luggage from Sky Harbor Airport since 2005. It's 4 years. The couple is accused of stealing nearly 1,000 items. After searching the couple's 14-room home, a Phoenix detective said there were suitcases everywhere, floor to ceiling, everywhere. In his note, Leo pointed out an interesting fact in the story. Most of the luggage is reportedly black and similar looking. Referring to my riff on replacing my squeaky wheeled bag, not sure if going for black sounds like such a good idea. Definitely wasn't a good idea for a new colleague of mine. Vishal was traveling to DC every week for a project, and the usual consulting grind: take the 6 a.m. American flight from O'Hare to Reagan National, catch the metro to the client, crank all day, check into the hotel around 7, go out to dinner, and then back to the hotel to hit the sack. So it was probably around 9:30 or 10 p.m. Monday night when Vishal finally discovered that he'd pulled somebody else's black rolling bag, same color, same model, out of the overhead bin of the morning flight, now some 12 to 13 hours ago. So sometime the next day, Vishal got reconnected with his black bag. He found the owner's business card in one of the front pockets, and that's an important travel tip for you new road warriors out there. Every pocket in the suitcase, stick a business card in it. And anyhow, got hold of the guy. Luckily, the guy had his mobile phone number on his business card, and so Vishal got connected with him over lunch. Over the past two podcasts, we've talked about forgetting things in that moment of transition when you're leaving the plane or the rental car, facing an overhead bin full of black bags after getting up at 3:30 a.m. in the morning, to catch the 6 a.m. flight. That's a tough one. That afternoon, Vishal walked down to a tourist store in DC, bought himself a little red and blue Obama bandana, and tied it around the handle of his bag. It wasn't a political statement. In his case, I think the change on the bandana kind of was, I think, referring to fresh underwear. Hey, anyhow, if you've got a question, a story, a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can send me a Twitter message at mpeacock, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is holiday travel tips. A little over a year ago, episode number 68 to be precise, for those of you who want to go back into the archives, I did a piece that I called Road Warrior 201, where I skipped the usual tips that you would get in Road Warrior 101, you know, things like don't check luggage unless you absolutely have to, wear loafers or slip-on shoes to make security screening easier, and instead gave some of my intermediate level, I guess, sort of non-obvious tips. And listening to the holiday travel tips in the most recent episode of Craig and Linda Martin's Indie Travel podcast, where they gave the Travel Commons podcast a nice shout-out. Thank you, Craig and Linda. Well, it made me think about revisiting the topic in time for the holiday travel season. So over my past couple of trips, say when I was returning from Seattle and then this flight out to Philadelphia, I was paying attention to the families, the ones, like I said, who were getting a jump on the Thanksgiving holiday. I mean, the families that made it through the terminal and through security easily were the ones who were paying attention. I mean, the parents took advantage of the time in the security line and they prepped their kids. They had the Nintendos already put away in their backpacks, the kids' coats off, the shoelaces undone, and they got the kids' attention, probably putting away the Nintendos was a good help, and told them what they needed to do while they were still in line so that when the kids got to the screening station, they weren't sort of wandering around and, you know, trying to figure out which end was up and looking at the shiny metal. I mean, they were there loading up the bins and ready to walk through the metal detector. I tell you, even the most hardened business traveler will give a family with young kids a break if they look like they're just trying. So the tip here, make good use of the long holiday security lines. Get prepared. Now, one of the other Road Warrior 201 tips from last year's podcast was factor in the potential costs of a missed connection due to weather, and because that's when you're responsible for your own room and board, you factor that cost in when you're choosing between a connecting flight and a direct flight, because oftentimes the direct flight is going to be a bit more expensive. Now, if you try to do this, but you're still stuck with a connection, as we come into the winter season, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, it's the winter season, you'll give that connection a bit of space. Give it a bit of breathing room. You know, in hubs like Denver or Dallas, airlines will offer connection times of as little as 45 minutes. Don't take it. It's tempting, but don't take it. I mean, think about it for a minute. That means that you have 15 minutes to get off your plane, which is going to be packed with once-a-year holiday travelers. You got to weave through the terminal that's packed with families wandering along four abreast, and then find your gate, which, remember, flights board 30 minutes beforehand. So, you know, any sort of traffic or weather delay, and that 15 minutes that you need to get from point A to point B, from flight A to flight B, plane A to plane B, it's gone. Give yourself a holiday break and save the stress. Go for the 90-minute connection. I mean, the worst case, you're going to have an extra 45 minutes to sort of wander around the airport, read a book, or grab a beer. I'll tell you, it's cheap insurance against sleeping on the airport floor. Now, another stress reliever, if you're on a direct flight or you're on the final leg to your, you know, your final destination, don't sweat about getting your carry-on bag into the cabin. Now, I'll tell you, on winter holiday flights, if you're in seating area 3 or higher, odds are between the winter coats and the huge packed bags and everybody bringing holiday gifts, there's a slim chance that there's going to be any overhead space left for you. Let the gate agent gate check the bag for you. I mean, you won't have to pay a checked bag fee, and it's very unlikely that they're going to lose your bag. I mean, it's only traveling a couple hundred feet from the jet bridge down to the tarmac and into the luggage bay. Yes, it'll add sort of 30 to 45 minutes at the end of your trip waiting at the luggage carousel. I'll tell you, but popping a vein in frustration is going to shorten your life a lot more than that. And now here's another Road Warrior 201 tip from last year. If you have to call an airline or a hotel and you don't have a special 1K or platinum or precious metal status phone number, choose the unpopular path on the phone tree. Travel companies don't staff their customer service centers for peak loads, like the day when a Chicago blizzard cancels 400 flights. I mean, it's just too expensive. So on those days when they do get hit, you're going to wait forever for an agent. If you followed sort of the typical path, sort of the happy path down the phone tree, on those days, choose sort of the lesser traveled paths down that tree. Choose the Spanish or the international travel option because most everyone else is choosing English and domestic travel. I mean, once you connect with someone, they'll take care of you. They all work in the same systems and in the same service centers. But above all, as you go into the holiday season, be realistic. You know what? It's going to be crowded. You know what? It's getting to be winter. There's going to be weather. Steel yourself for it. Get your inner karma tuned for it and give yourself extra time. I mean, figure out how much time you think it's going to take and then add another 50%. At worst, you'll have some extra time to watch the planes take off, but it'll allow you to breathe a bit easier when the snow begins to fall. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Frequent Flyers, the documentary. In episode number 78, we talked about the upcoming movie Up in the Air, where George Clooney stars as an extreme frequent flyer. Dave of the Sand and Tsunamis blog left a comment on the Travel Commons website pointing to a 20-minute documentary about mileage junkies, as Dave called them. And the documentary, fittingly enough, is called Frequent Flyer. I caught up with the creator, Gabriel Lee, over Skype and talked to him about his film.
Heavy jets, great circle routes, airport transfers in strange cities, hundreds of thousands of frequent flyer miles. I love this world. I recently hit 1 million lifetime miles with American. This after 8 years or so of moderately obsessive behavior. But among others that do this sort of thing, I'm a lightweight.
Where did you get the idea for a documentary around frequent flyer miles or frequent traveling?
Well, it had been something that I had thought about for a few years, probably leading up to when I actually started making it. And it was just that I had the opportunity to make a 20-minute documentary for my master's thesis at UC Berkeley. And, you know, we were sort of workshopping different ideas, and I kept coming back to, like, this old idea about doing it about these frequent flyers. And I guess the main motivation to do that was that I hadn't actually seen anything like it.
You know, everybody has a hobby. Mine is, you know, flying, and people spend money on their hobbies, and so I just enjoy flying. That's part of my hobby. Some people buy toy trains, some people, you know, paint, some people collect watches. I, you know, fly places for lunch and come home that night.
When you were spending time with frequent flyer junkies, these mileage junkies, I mean, did you notice anything common? I mean, other than the kind of obsessive compulsive disorder around frequent flyer miles?
I didn't really come across anything that seemed like, oh, this is obviously something that everyone shares. I mean, they most of the people that I've come across in this world, like, they seem to be people who, you know, who love details and strategy and thinking about, you know, they're good with numbers and they're good with plotting out things like this. But I didn't really notice. I mean, it takes some amount of obsessive compulsiveness, I think, to be able to do this well. I think it's probably a fine line between you know, obsessive compulsive and this kind of someone who loves numbers and loves strategy and loves to be exact and work out the best possible way to do things.
What were some of the more unique strategies that guys were telling you about?
The one thing that was new to me, which is in the movie, is when Steve Belkin talks about hiring other people, in effect creating what he calls a labor infrastructure to earn miles on a sort of industrial scale almost.
He came across an $8 airfare being offered between two cities in northern Thailand and saw an opportunity.
And over the course of 3 weeks, I created a labor infrastructure from scratch, hired 10 handicapped people, 10 unemployed rice farmers to fly back and forth on this route for $8, four times a day, for 6 weeks straight.
What was the most interesting thing that didn't get into your 20 minutes that you kind of left on the virtual cutting room floor?
There were probably a lot of little interesting bits here and there that I've sort of, you know, blocked from my mind because I didn't want to have to think too much about what I had to leave out, because of course, as you can imagine, it was kind of a painful process whittling it down and down and down. And I think, you know, the one that stands out to me the most when I'm just thinking about it offhand here is that when Steve Belkin tells that story that I mentioned already about the Thai mileage run with his employees, he had a lot of other aspects to that story which were all sort of hilarious and ridiculous, and I had to kind of make it, you know, as presentable as possible, because it's hard to show someone telling a story for 20 minutes in a 20-minute movie. The one thing that I had to take out of that story, which was the funniest, I think, was that he talked about how at some point the Thai Airlines people, the employees, the people that are flying these flights, the crew, they decided that it was bad karma because the people that he had employed to fly these flights back and forth in Thailand, a lot of them were handicapped former farmers who were out of work, and the crew decided that it was actually, you know, the karma was too bad. I guess in Thailand that's the belief system, that they didn't want to fly this many handicapped people at once because they thought the plane might crash. So there was a period where they actually refused to fly them, and he had to broker a deal where they flew less on each given flight, something like that. It was like another ridiculous aspect to this story.
Hey, Gabriel, thanks for taking the time to talk. Like I said, I thought the film was nicely done. I thought it was a good sort of personal take on the topic, and I enjoyed it, and so I'm glad I had the time to talk.
All right, thanks very much. Nice talking with you.
Hey, Gabriel's documentary, Frequent Flyer, can be found on the Vimeo video site. I'll post a link in the show notes. And on Wednesday, November 25th, so this coming up Wednesday, a 13-minute version of the film will be on the PBS Frontline website. Go out, find it, watch the film. I think you'll enjoy it. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 80. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music, as always, is from Magnatunes, the We Are Not Evil label, Miss America by Beyond Seven, On Condition of Anonymity by The West Exit, and Subtle Vice by Solace. There you go. I managed to be able to pronounce all of the bands without Toy boating them. You can find these and more songs at magnatunes.com. And as always, if you have a story, a thought, comment, gripe, moans and groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to MPcock on Twitter, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com, or what is it, D or E, all of the above. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And as you travel over this holiday season, breathe deeply. Have a good time. Have fun with your family. And until we meet again, until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying